Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello. Welcome to Wiki Politiki Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the endarkened corridors of power, and we also shine a light ahead of us on the path to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than defend positions. And we have another purpose as well, and that is to provide a context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, overwhelming, and disturbing. Speaking of which, at a time when reality checks are bouncing like crazy, and we have individuals like Rudy Giuliani declaring that truth is not truth, it helps to get some long-term perspective. There's a famous quote from Martin Luther King, inspired by the writings of American minister Theodore Parker, quote, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice." Of course, these days, where the very present arc of the immoral universe seems bent on injustice, some skepticism is understandable. So if you find your skeptic system is overflowing due to the backwash coming from both vicious lies and vicious truths, this week our guest will get things flowing toward what Charles Eisenstein has called the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. This week's Wiki Politiki guest, Jim Kenney, is an author and student of cultural evolution. And he would say that our current political new word situation is an eddy in a river flowing relentlessly toward greater awareness and independence and interdependence, that it's a cross current in the course of evolution, which ultimately only flows one way. Jim Kenney is the author of Thriving and the Cross Current, Clarity and Hope in a Time of Cultural Sea Change. He's also the executive director of Common Ground, an adult study center focusing on the world's great religious, philosophical, spiritual, and cultural traditions and their implications for humanity. He's the executive director of the Interreligious Engagement Project, working with global religious communities to address the world's critical problems through cooperative partnerships with government, business, education, media, intergovernmental organizations. Jim Kenney was a founding trustee of the Parliament of the World's Religions, and he served as global director from 1996 to 2002, and was until recently trustee and project coordinator for the International Irreligious, that's my joke, Interreligious Peace Council. That was a typo. Whose members include Nobel Prize Peace Prize laureates the Dalai Lama, Myriad Maguire, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and many other renowned spiritual leaders committed to working together for peace, justice, and ecological sustainability. Welcome, Jim.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Good. Well, you know, you obviously have quite a long history of involvement in projects that are about the betterment of humankind. And given what seems to be backward movement right now, what is it that you find encouraging about our current condition and situation, as in you are here? What's the most encouraging thing that you see?
Well, I don't want to pick one single thing. I will say this, that the list of what I call signs of change, signs of cultural evolutionary shift, and I'll say more as we go on about what I mean by cultural evolution, but essentially it has to do with our dominant values moving in the direction of a closer fit with reality. And I think no matter where you pick up, if you talk about social and economic justice and human rights, profound value shift. I want to, at the get-go, I want to say I'm not talking about facts on the ground. I'm not saying that everything is getting better, but I'm saying dominant human values, and values have to change before facts on the ground change, our dominant human values are moving in the direction of what I would call a serious spiritual and progressive advance. So social and economic justice and universal human rights, ecological sustainability, the rights and needs and perspective of women and children in all of these areas and in so many more, our values are shifting dramatically. I always like to point out that 75% of Americans actually consider themselves environmentalists. Now, on the face of it, that's ridiculous. 75% of us aren't environmentalists. But how much better is it that 75% of us think we are than if only 10 did? So as wacky as that is, it's something worth including in your wiki.
We'll make the wiki wackier by doing this. I appreciate that. And I think that, first of all, the way that things seem to change is that, and we'll talk more about this as we unwrap your ideas about cultural and spiritual evolution, but the way things seem to change is that there is a change of perception, and then the structures and systems of thinking can then adjust to that perception. And then finally, the institutions and the actions that flow from those institutions change. So the fact that 75% of people want to be environmentalists and want to care about the physical world is encouraging. It's a good beginning, and I think that's an indicator perhaps of where we're going. One of the wonderful things, you know, we've been on a couple of calls, at least one call prior with Barbara Fields from Association for Global New Thought. And one of the ideas you brought up there, I just found fascinating, and that's the idea of the eddy in a river, in currents and so on. And I think just to introduce your approach, the idea that that cultures evolve and values move in more closer to fit with reality, what is the eddy in this flow, and what function does it have?
Well, the eddy has to do with the fact that let me just begin by saying my argument is that we live at a time, and you can think of it as two waves, one descending, one rising. And the descending wave is what you might call modern values, which were perfectly reasonable, and they served us well in their time. They, in many cases, the old values that are fading, losing influence in our time, are the basis for the newer values that are rising. The old values told us that fairness was vital. A new set of values has all sorts of new ideas about what fairness means in the 21st century. But you have an older set of values that include patriarchy, include the idea that social and economic justice and human rights are never attainable, include the idea that the earth is not fragile and that nothing that human beings can do could possibly disturb it. And then here comes a newer set of values that challenges all of that, that talks about gender equity, social and economic justice, talks about ecological sustainability, and says all of these things are attainable and all of these things are vital. So I like to visualize the older curve on the way down. I'm tracing this. It's radio, but I'm gesturing and doing the air graphic as we speak. An older set of values on the way down and out, a newer set of values on the way up and in. At some point, they cross. And at some point, that older set of values which carries inertia, enormous inertia, and the newer set of values, which has tremendous momentum, by the way, give me momentum over inertia any day, are roughly equal. They're roughly equal in influence. So what would it be like to live at a time when the older set of values, definitely on the way out, patriarchy, nationalism, racism, on the way out, but roughly equal in influence to the newer set of values on the way in. If I ask, what would it be like to live at a time like that? Well, the answer is it would be exactly like this, because that's where we are. Now, that
very well, very
occasion,
well said, yes. Mm-hmm.
So what would be the condition, the social condition that would inhere in a time of the crossing of older values moving out, newer values moving in? It would be turbulence. And the turbulence takes many forms. One is excitement about what might happen. Sort of bottom up, self-organizing systems begin to spring up and so on, all kinds of good stuff. But on the darker side, there is the eddy. And the eddy is the, since I already started with two waves, I thought I'd continue the watery metaphors. And I ended up with eddies. An eddy is a whirlpool of resistance to a prevailing flow. No eddy ever reversed the flow of a stream, but they sure do try. And they can create enormous turbulence and disturbance in their local vicinities. So I challenge people. I say, look around and tell me what depresses you the most about our society. What is it that leads you to say things are getting worse, not better, when I'm arguing, no, things are definitely, in terms of values, the most important set of things, getting better, not worse. What leads one to say, no, it's going the other way? It's the exposure to these eddies. And eddies are... it's groups, it's individuals, but it's patterns of reaction. I don't like the idea of an end to racism. I don't like, I am disturbed by an end to patriarchy. I am disturbed by the idea of universal human rights and social justice, because I was raised to believe that being white and male and Christian was my ticket to success, and suddenly I'm living in a situation where none of that is true. So that's my eddy, is backlash against all of those things. Now those things, those changes are inevitable. They are happening, but I'm going to drag my feet, and I'm going to be bitter, and I'm going to be angry, and on rare occasions I'm going to be capable of violence. The eddy is good news, actually, because it's an answer to the question, why is it, if things are moving in a positive direction, why doesn't it always feel like that?
Good. I like that. In fact, I've adopted that idea since our conversation a couple of weeks ago, and I'm calling our president Eddie Trump. Eddie Trump. We're calling him Eddie. You can call me Eddie. And I like that idea. Now you said, speaking about, you know, you're speaking about being white, male, and Christian. How did you, as you said, you off stage, you said that you grew up in Colorado. How did you come to the work that you're doing and to the sense of cultural evolution and also interacting with ecumenical spiritual leaders all over the world?
Well, this is sort of ironic, but I'm living proof that it is possible to grow up white, male, and Christian and understand the world a little more creatively. My graduate school was in comparative religions. I studied at Northwestern the history and literature of religions, which required a sort of a basic level mastery of the world's great religious traditions and a deep focus in two. And mine ended up, it was an odd kind of thing, but my two traditions ended up to be Buddhism, Buddhist philosophy, and modern physics. And that's what I wrote my dissertation about. And the core idea where the two came together, modern physics and Buddhist philosophy, was on the idea of interdependence, that somehow everything in the universe bears on and is borne on by everything else, that no two things can be separated enough in time or space that they do not relate. And if you live in a universe, if you come to understand that you live in an interdependent universe, the only strategy that makes any sense is compassion. So that began to grow on me. I did a lot of research in different religious traditions and finally decided after 5 years of teaching high school in Colorado that I wanted to go back to graduate school. And what I wanted to do was study the religions of the world, because I was interested in the cultures of the world, and I thought there's no better way to get at them. So I did that, and eventually, through just a whole series of surprises and happenstance, serendipity, I got involved in a big project that began in 1988, and it was called the Parliament of the World's Religions. And the idea was initially just to celebrate the 1893 Parliament of Religions that was held in Chicago as part of the Columbian Exposition, the first coming together of people from different religions that had ever really taken place. And 100 years later, in 1993, after 5 years of work, we convened 8,000 people in Chicago, not to talk about one super religion or boil down to the pablum that they all accept, but rather to talk about how religions could make a difference working together, specifically with respect to peace and nonviolence, social and economic justice and human rights, and again, ecological sustainability. That movement is still very much alive. I served as the global director till 2002. We held parliaments in Chicago, then in Cape Town, then in Barcelona. I moved on after that, but I've always been involved ever since in projects bringing together people of various religious communities to address those critical issues and to try to, work together to make the world a better place. So I've seen the really dopey, ugly side of religion and the magnificent side.
Good. We'll be back with Jim Kenney after this break, and we'll talk more about both religion and evolution. Steve Behrman, this is Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, Everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi there, this is Steve Behrman with WikiPolitiki. We're back with our guest today, Jim Kenny. We're talking about both religion and evolution, and I'm reminded that my understanding, the word religion comes from the Latin religare, which means to bind us, and in this sense, to bind us to the web of life, to bind us to the cosmos, to bind us to one another. And there are those who would say that the word bind is a bit sounds a bit like slavery, but my sense is that the that there is a need for something that connects us, as you said, that creates interdependence and compassion, like Buddhism does. So, before we jump back into talking about the arc of evolution, what have you found about helping this to relaunch this Parliament of World Religions, where you're essentially talking about that which transcends both religion and non-religion? What do you think about the prospects of enlightened religious leaders helping to lead a movement for transformation in the world?
Well, I'm really glad to bring that up, and I'm so glad to hear you're the first person I've ever heard that got religare right. Usually what people say is it comes from the root that means to bind, and so it ties you up and it messes you up and it and so on. No, it means anchorage. That was the Latin usage, and being bound to, being tied to things that are relevant and meaningful in your life. So I couldn't agree more. And what I've found is that when you bring religious leaders and religious, it wasn't always religious leaders, religious congregations and communities, when you bring them together, the first thing you need to do is to set aside all the theological differences. Look, we're not going to be talking about whether God exists or God doesn't exist. People are surprised to realize that perhaps as many as half of the religionists in the world don't particularly believe in God. They believe in a one or something. But so you set that aside and talk instead about what's your vision for the world? What do you think is going wrong, and how could we fix it? And we often made the most progress when we spoke about specific things like poverty and thirst and hunger and AIDS and hopelessness of children and the burdens of mothers and so on. And I'll tell you, every group we ever got together in so many different settings, people wanted to talk about these things and the differences that might have separated them, the suspicions that might have been in play, melted away when they started talking about how they could make their communities healthier, better, wiser, and so on. So I am constantly challenged, or have been over the years. People say, how can you possibly work with religion? Don't you understand that religion has made the world a much worse place? And my argument is that it is to the contrary. I think to imagine the world without the humanizing effect of religion, we wouldn't talk about universal human rights if it weren't for the religions of the world. That's where the idea is born and nurtured and so on. So I'm very positive about the idea of some of the very best of the world's religious leaders getting together and working for positive change. And I'm positive about it and happy about it because I see it. I've been involved in it for 20 years. And it's happening all over the world. The Dalai Lama is a good example.
Yes. Perfect.
He walks his talk. And he's just one of many that I've been privileged to get to know and to sort of respect from near and far.
We have a very
un-pope-like spring in my step.
Oh, good. We need that. We definitely need to spring forward, lest we fall back. What I appreciate about what you said is that, well, of course, the Swami would say it differently. He'd say it proves that you can indeed teach an old dogma new tricks. So you've been helping to teach old dogmas new tricks. I want to get
and the first thing you do is get rid of dogma. You set it aside.
Exactly. And you know, I think that also the Swami also would say that we're divided by the beliefs in our head, and we are unified by the love in our hearts. And I think that that's when you get people together and you allow them to drop. You create enough safety in the space to allow them to drop those protective, their guard dogmas, you know. We want to curl up warm dogma on a dark night of the soul. They allowed it to drop that away and begin to see the universality of human experience and so on. Let's get
the
into
three dogma night.
That's right. There's actually a group, three dogma nights, one Muslim, one Christian, and one Jew. They're perfect.
Walk into a bar.
Good. We'll use that. Thank you. You've created comedy here.
Welcome.
So anyway, let's talk more about this arc, this fascinating arc that you were talking about, the ascending and descending waves. So take us into your journey and jump right in.
Well, the first point that I make when I talk to groups is it sounds simple, but it's actually very controversial. Cultural evolution is real. There are lots of scholars who don't believe that. They say cultures do not evolve. They don't get wiser, deeper, better, broader. They merely change. And so that's the first question. Do you think culture evolves, moves somewhere, is ascending? Is there an arc? Or do you think culture just, changes up, down? So I argue that the evidence is overwhelming that cultural evolution is real. It is the slow movement of our dominant values toward a closer fit with reality. So gradually we get over the belief. We come to realize that the belief that slavery is somehow moral and justified is absolutely insupportable. The idea that women are somehow inferior to men, insupportable, never was true, but now we know enough to know how untrue it is. And all the other examples I've been giving, the earth is in fact fragile, and human beings are capable of, the whole point of that. Coming to those realizations that patriarchy has outlived its usefulness, that ecological sustainability is vital and possible, that's cultural evolution. Cultures do get wiser. But first, as you started to say before, Steve, first our perception changes. We come to understand reality a little bit better. If we had forever to talk about this, I would be saying, in every dimension, in every way that our understanding of reality grows and deepens, somehow a new appreciation of interdependence is involved. But I also say cultural evolution is punctuated, which means at various points in our history, we have gone through periods. In my book, I argue that there are at least four of these periods, and we're in one right now. But maybe there have been more. I call them sea changes. And a sea change is a period in which cultural evolution, which is always going on, it's inexorable, it's always happening, but it's incremental. But every now and then we come to a period where all our interrelated values begin to percolate, begin to advance, begin to move toward closer fit with reality. And I talk about three prior, including the scientific revolution, for example, when a cultural evolutionary sea change, the acceleration of the change that's gone on all the time, but the acceleration was really worth noting. People are often surprised when I say, and the fourth, at least in my county, the fourth, the most recent, is the one that's underway right now. Yeah, we're living in a cultural evolutionary sea change, a time of the dramatic acceleration of value shift in a progressive direction, moving toward a closer fit with reality. And I also argue, this is sort of one, two, three, that cultural evolution is real. It's punctuated. It happens more strongly at times than it does at other times. But there are also benchmarks. And so I spend a lot of time in the book talking about those benchmarks, increasing complexity. As the world evolves, as our values evolve, they become more complex. I have people say, I don't want a more complex life. And I always say, yeah, you do. You do. You're mistaking complexity for complication. A tangle of band instruments outside the orchestra room, that's complicated. But that those same instruments used to perform a symphony, that's complex. You want more complexity in your life. So that's one benchmark. As cultures evolve, they become more complex, or they experience greater complexity. They come to new levels of awareness of interdependence. There it comes again. And closely related to those other two, and drawing on the thought particularly of Ken Wilber, I'm sure you know well, the integration of different modes of knowing, coming to realize that you can't understand economics without understanding theater and vice versa. And then finally, we hit the point we talked about a little bit, that there is resistance, and resistance is the eddies. And those eddies, I think, come from three principal sources. And again, I'm not expecting people to remember all this, but just to let it wash over you and get the general gist. One source is cultural confusion. We have a lot of people saying, I don't like this. I don't like change. I don't want to think about patriarchy. I don't want to think about women. I don't want to think about the earth. I'm culturally confused, and I like it that way. Those are the couch potatoes of cultural evolution. But the most dangerous group of all, in a way, is the militants. And the militants are those for whom these changes spark an identity crisis. You know, I want to live in a world in which to be a white Christian male is my ticket to success. And I don't live in that world any longer, and I don't like it, and I'm going to fight back. Think about the neo-Confederacy. What are these people fighting for? Is there any hope that they're going to bring back the value set and the period to which they're always adverting? No, there's no hope at all, but they're angry. They're lost, and they want to lash out. So that's another example of eddies. But maybe the most insidious is the fact that there are people whose wealth and power, you know all about this, whose wealth and power are threatened. And they know how to manipulate the couch potatoes, and they know how to manipulate the angry young men who make up the militant group. And that's the source, it seems to me. I refer to these people as the buccaneers, the ones concerned with wealth, and the hegemons, the ones concerned with power. And they don't care about social values and so on. All they care about is wealth and power. But they recognize the opportunity to manipulate these deadly spins, if you will. You'll like this, Steve. I actually gave into the temptation, and I called one section of the book talking about eddies the Whirlpool Catalog.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, exactly. So, and anyway, we're not talking about washing machines, although we're talking about spin, that's for certain. The spin cycle is quite, yeah.
Naturally, I really there appreciate are people who this, say yes to this and people who say no, but that's all.
Well, no, I appreciate this notion of resistance because, again, that when you have these two forces that are at this moment seem to be equally balanced, even though one is on its way out and the other is on its way in, this whole idea of resist Donald Trump. And when you come to recognize that Donald Trump is resisting reality, that movement, the futility, maybe we should call it feudalism because it's so futile, the futility of resisting an idea whose time has come or a reality whose time has come is is can be painful in the midst of it. You know, that resisting, the resistance creates pain. I want to say something else about how your ideas naturally are consistent with what I've learned from working with Bruce Lipton about biological evolution, that biological evolution, mm-hmm. like cultural and spiritual evolution, at each phase of this evolution, as there's been greater complexity, we've come from the single cell organisms and small organisms to you and me, and we're communities of 30 to 50 trillion cells. So we have a very complex system. And what nature tells us about complexity is that when a certain level of density in a population is reached, and I know we can joke that we've proven that our population is as dense as it could possibly be, you know, and so on. But if for example, you've ever had fish and you've got a fish at the pet store and you put it in a little fish bowl and it swims around, and then you get another fish and they all swim around. But as soon as the population reaches a certain density, the fish they take on a pattern. First they take on a barrel pattern, and then they take on a school pattern where they swim together. So we are at the point, I would suggest, in evolution, where the old forms of cultural organization, like the patriarchy, like these hierarchies, like dominate and be dominated or be dominated, have reached a point where they can no longer organize us in the ways that we're going to have to organize in order to survive. So it seems like when we get back from this next break that we're taking in a minute, we can talk more about what the implications are for people in physical reality on the ground who are I certainly have taken some great, let's say, encouragement, realizing that this is just a backwash right now, and the front wash is watching us in a different direction. We'll be back after this break with Jim Kenney. We'll be talking about cultural evolution. Steve Behrman, this is Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
All Okay, this is Steve Behrman. We're back with Wiki Politiki. My guest, Jim Kenney. We're talking about the ebb and flow, particularly the flow of progress and cultural evolution, and sea change. So what will it take to get from the sea change that we're in now to where people actually see change? And how do you suggest people – first of all, tell us more about your about these waves and where your book takes us. And then we want to know what people can be how people can integrate this into their lives and work.
Well, I would sort of answer it backwards because I'm struck by something you were saying toward the end of that last segment, and that is that to understand that the Trump presidency is the resistance, and to resist the resistance is perhaps a bit quixotic or quixotic. and I agree. I think we can waste a lot of time trying to resist a particular individual, a particular set of individuals, a particular political party or group. And instead, I think what we do is start to, as much as possible, live the change. Now, this is nothing new. We've all been saying this for years. But to live the change that we want to see, we have to be the change that we want to see. So there are so many things happening. I usually tell people, find one way in which values are changing. Are people really, in general, is it becoming more and more common around the world? And I'm arguing very strongly that it is. I've seen it in every part of the world firsthand. Are people moving toward a deeper understanding of universal human rights? Universal human rights just means there are certain things that must be done for every human being and certain other things that must never be done to any human being. 100 years ago, that is not something that most of the world's value leaders would have signed off on. Today, it's something that almost all of us sign off on, at least in an intellectual kind of way. Well, there are thousands of movements and organizations and NGOs and so on that are working to make that a reality. Find one. Maybe you don't have time to devote, but maybe you have a little money. Maybe you have no money, but you have a little bit of time. But there's no shortage of places to put your oar in. And one of the things I've found is that when you get involved in one project, new doors start opening on all sides. One of the things that I talk about in the book is signs of change. What's happening? Why is it that I believe that we live in this time of sea change? And I think I'll just give this example. There is no culture in the world, although many people would deny it, the Islamophobes among us would say it's not true of the world of Islam, but there's no culture in the world in which women's voices are not being heard more clearly, louder, and more to the point. And that is especially true in Muslim culture. I have so many Muslim friends that I've worked closely with over the years, and I'll tell you, the voices of women are not going to be damped out much longer. Most people look at Saudi Arabia. That's like looking for signs of the end of patriarchy by taking the pulse of the Vatican. It might not be the place you start. And Saudi Arabia might not be the place you start. Women in roles of leadership, Shireen Ebadi from Iran, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, who speaks constantly about all the things that are happening that are being driven by Muslim women and women of other cultures and other religions and other experiences. It's happening everywhere. Social and economic justice, This is a growth area, and it's so easy to find this out if we stop taking our daily dose of depressing media information. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. So most of what we read in the broadcast press, and worse still, perhaps, almost as bad in the print media, most of it's kind of depressing. But it doesn't take much digging in the age of the internet to find out that there are countless exciting things that are going on. At the United Nations, then I'll shut up, but at the United Nations, there are over 1,000 religiously affiliated, religious or interreligious, NGOs that work for peace, justice, and ecological sustainability. So there's plenty of good news out there. You just have to drill down, and you don't have to drill very far.
You know, one of the things that's really caught hold of my imagination recently is that famous quote from Dwight Eisenhower, to the idea being that there's going to come a time that people of the world want peace so badly that the governments of the world will have to give it to them. And I think that really, because of the kinds of instruments of communication that we have right now, we may be approaching this Eisenhower moment. What do you think the prospects are for a movement, a worldwide movement of movements? Is this jumping the gun? Is it imminent? Is this something that's cooking under the surface?
I would say it's absolutely not jumping the gun, and it has moved beyond imminent, and it's not even cooking under the surface. It's all over the place. I'll just, if you don't mind, another concrete example. I have a friend, a young woman who's actually born in Costa Rica, but does most of her work in Mexico, and her focus is on empowering women in the third world, and especially women empowering women. She's constantly saying in the past, when people spoke about empowering women, it was always men empowering women. No, women empowering women. But she works very, very closely with groups in Latin America, Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and so on. And she does it not by going to conferences. She doesn't travel. She does it all on the internet. And these people share resources. They share ideas. That share resources, by the way, is extraordinary. Because think about this. Think about an NGO or a volunteer, an activist organization that would share information about its donors. But they all do that. They just lay it all out there. Here are the people that have given to us. If you want to appeal to them, be our guest. And here's our latest idea. Do you think you could replicate this in Sierra Leone? And what are you doing there that we might be able to do in Mexico City? And that's just one very powerful network that happens to be headed by an amazing, miraculous woman. But there are countless. And the idea is the idea of a movement of movements. If you talk to my friend Lydia, if you talk to countless other people that I've worked with over the years and ask them this question about a movement of movements, they're all going to say the same thing. It's already here.
Wow. Well, that's very, very heartening. And so how do we take all of this stuff that's in the background, that's been put in the background by the news that's inserted itself in the foreground, and by, you know, certainly the Trump presidency is in the foreground. He is the president, and he has his party has control of all three branches of government. In looking at that reality in the short run, what do people do? What is the steps that people can take to restore their own personal sanity and recognize the track that the world really is on?
I think it's a really good exercise. And just imagine if each of us took one day a week and said, okay, Wednesday is going to be my find the good news day. And the rest of the week I can marinate in the, you know, swamp. But one day of the week I'm going to discover something that's going on that's good, that's heartening, and so on. And I think politically, now I'm very sensitive to this, this is one of my pet peeves, I think that our political scene is really being tainted by the argument of false equivalency. You know, both sides do it, both sides are just as guilty, Democrats are no better than Republicans, the left is no better than the right. Well, if you talk about the signs of change, the things that are changing, if you talk about the values that I see as upswing values, emerging values, new wave and new age values. I didn't mean to say new age, I meant sea change. That only confused things. Where do they find a home? Well, it's certainly not on the right, and it's not everywhere on the left. But if there are places where these ideas have been seeded and are beginning to grow and come to fruition, it is absolutely on the left. More women are running for elective office at the national level and at the state level this year than ever before. Emily's List, you know, which helps women candidates and helps them find funding and so on. In 2016, I believe they opened files on 1,600 women that were running for office. This year already, they have files on 28,000. They had to knock out walls in their office to put in new desks to try to help these people. And most of those women are running on local issues like education, like justice, like anti-racism, like combating nationalism, that we would all applaud. I'm very excited. You've got people newly interested in politics that don't have to be persuaded that a movement of movements is an idea whose time has come. Don't have to be persuaded that patriarchy is over, that social justice is vital, that sustainability is critical. These are people who don't have to be persuaded. You know, when you've got one political party that's in full-throated denial of climate change and the other, which is not, okay, which side are you going to go with? I know my answer. And that doesn't mean I'm going to register for the party.
Well, of course, the Swami says we have two political parties in this country, the Democratic Party and the Undemocratic Party. Although I would have to say that the insurgents that took hold of the Republican Party, the Tea Party people, along with some of the backward things, were also some of the concerns that the libertarian concerns that we all have, which have to do with the militarization of our police forces, which have to do with a lot of the libertarian conservatives are anti-GMO. They're against fracking. They're in favor of the environment and so on. And so I think it gets a little bit complex, particularly because of how the two narratives have created two different realities. So in a very few minutes,
but if you look at the two narratives and say, if you look at the two narratives and say, here's where they meet in libertarianism, then I get off this train. I couldn't disagree with that more, because libertarians arrive at positions that you or I might arrive at, but for reasons that are completely different. Their meta narrative is a narrative of organized political selfishness. And that's why I don't like fracking, because it might be in my backyard, not because it's bad for the community or bad for all of us. So I don't go there. And I do think that the Tea Party has had a little bit of the sort of outrage that we saw in something like the Occupy movement. But not much. And I've seen a number of political scientists try to grind that, axe and say, you know, these are just two sides of the same coin. I think it's I don't think it's a good argument.
I agree with you about false equivalence. And clearly, I mean, there's one way that is, moving us toward greater connection and love. And there's one that's moving us toward wants to revert back to separateness and selfishness,
yeah,
and the selfish gene, and the and all of that. So I think that that's a pretty good distinction. Anything else you want to say, and letting people know how to reach you, Jim, before we close.
I'm always interested in talking to interested people, and my email is jim@seachangesplural.net, seachanges.net, jim@seachanges.net.
Very good.
So that's how to reach me, and I do actually respond.
I bet you do. I really appreciate our conversation, and I really get that there are certain values that are very, very connected with the golden rule, with in a certain regard something that's been at the bottom of every spiritual and ethical path, and that's been distorted by the dominator. So as we release this dominate or be dominated meme, and we have it in our face right now, we have the opportunity to create more safety among us. And as studies have shown, when there is more safety, people become more progressive. When there's more fear, they become more conservative.
Okay. Steven Pinker writes about that beautifully.
Yes. Thank you. Some enlightenment now, wouldn't be a bad idea. Thank you, Jim Kenney, for being our guest on Wiki Politiki. This is Steve Behrman, and we'll be talking. Thank you again, Jim. We'll be talking with you again next week.